You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM.
Let's head on down to South Korea and talk about the Seoul National University Hospital, because the Korean National Police Agency has concluded that a cyber attack on Seoul National University Hospital, one of the largest hospitals in the entire country, was the handiwork of North Korean attackers. Now, the attack occurred between May and June of 2021. The police report does not explicitly name any particular threat group, but is believed that the Kimsuki group is responsible for the attack, according to South Korean media. Now, using 7 servers based in multiple countries, including South Korea, the attackers infiltrated the internal network, leading to a data exposure of 831,000 South Koreans, most of whom were patients. So, obviously, never a good thing, but heads up to you, my listeners and followers in South Korea. If you use the Seoul National University Hospital for your medical needs, please check in with them. Moving on. Let's head on back to the United States and talk about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, or CFPB. They disclosed last week they suffered a data breach, and they say it may have compromised sensitive information in consumer accounts from a number of financial institutions. Now, the CFPB has attributed this data breach to a now former examiner employee sending confidential records to a personal email account. In other words, this person, whoever he or she was taking internal sensitive documents that obviously are marked, you know, not for personal use, if you will, and sending them to, I don't know, their Gmail account or somewhere. Now, the confidential records reportedly included supervisory information on 45 financial institutions, along with 2 spreadsheets containing names and transaction-specific account numbers from 7 financial institutions across the United States. Financial institutions most affected by the data breach had 256,000 customers who may have had their sensitive information compromised. Well, one had as few as just 2 potential accounts exposed. So this runs the gamut from a few to hundreds of thousands at least. Now, the agency reportedly discovered the improper email usage on Valentine's Day, because why not, when a team member alerted them after noticing the now former examiner had copied their personal email address on a work correspondence. And there you go. That's when it all unraveled. Moving on. Let's talk about Ambulance Victoria Down Under. That's right, we're heading to Australia, because the confidential drug and alcohol test results of graduate paramedics were available for every Ambulance Victoria staff member to view under a significant breach that has been reported to the state's privacy watchdog. Now, Ambulance Victoria's CEO, Jane Miller, confirmed on Friday afternoon that the unacceptable quote-unquote breach involved 600 test results relating to a quote-unquote few hundred people, and offered her unreserved apology to those impacted. She said the organization was in the process of contacting those people who had been affected by that breach, which included about 30 positive test results. And again, when we are talking about, you know, very sensitive information, it's the last thing you want to know. Now, according to an email sent late Thursday to members of Victorian Ambulances Union, and first reported by The Guardian, confidential spreadsheets related to pre-employment testing of graduate paramedics in 2017 and 2018 were available on the staff intranet until the union alerted Ambulance Victoria to the problem. And here we are. And so obviously that's a huge thing. If you're one of those 600 or so paramedics, you know, that got caught up in this, heads up to you. Now, heading back to the United States, and this is our finally for tonight. And the reason why it is our finally is simply this. We're talking about the Illinois Department of Health Care and Family Services and the Illinois Department of Human Services as well, or IDHS. Now, they disclosed a data breach within the state of Illinois' application for benefits eligibility systems, Manage My Case portal. Now, the ABE system is responsible for determining the eligibility of state-funded medical benefit programs like Medicaid and Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, it's basically what Illinois calls welfare, and the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families as well. Now, the breach involved unauthorized accounts created in the system, meaning somebody got in, which then accessed and linked to existing customer MMC accounts by using the customer's personal information, which was stolen from another source. In other words, you know, maybe they got everybody's info thanks to the Equifax breach a while back, and here it is. So much stuff floating around the dark web. Now, the information that was accessed includes names, social security numbers, recipient identification numbers, addresses, phone numbers, and income information. The breach potentially affects individuals who have applied for or are receiving benefits through that portal. And the reason why this is the last one that we are talking about, it's not because it's my home state. It's because this breach essentially scraped a lot of sensitive, personally identifiable information on those in this state that, quite frankly, don't have the financial resources to fend for themselves. And if we start to see a slew, you know, of fraud, because, you know, again, you can run an identity theft scam on pretty much anybody. You know, we can see credit ruined. We can see identities ruined by virtue of that. We can see, you know, credit shot. And if you don't have the financial resources to basically unstick yourself, and it takes months potentially to unstick yourself, or afford the attorneys that have to go after, you know, whoever it is to basically unstick your credit once again, this becomes a huge problem. It makes things worse for those that are already in a pretty dire situation. And so I don't like to see that. That's never fun, you know, and not that I'd want a identity theft, let's say, on myself, but, you know, I'm able to afford, fortunately, identity monitoring, those kinds of things. And so by virtue of that, I have more protection than somebody that, quite frankly, can't afford that. That's on food stamps, basically. So that's not good. We have to take care of each other. And so I wanted to make that the last thing that I said here, you know, in this in this broadcast. So there you go. So with that, just be cool to each other. And those were your breaches of the week. Were you affected? Let me know. We've got to talk about Facebook once again, because Facebook ads are delivering malware. Now, before I dive into that topic, I just want to mention, again, a couple of days ago, I did a video that basically was entitled Screw Facebook and Screw the FTC, and how Facebook has been violating this, including our children's privacy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they really haven't done anything except get a slap on the wrist. I was rather angry in that. But at the end of that video, I mentioned that I was going to spend $100 in a Facebook ad to promote that video on Facebook's platform as an advertisement that people could share, interact with, do whatever. And sure enough, Facebook took my $100, and now thousands of people have seen it, and that ad is still running. And so I'm pretty proud of that, and quite frankly, if I can get at least one or two people off that platform, that is money well spent. And so with that, let's dive into today's topic, because malware is now coming through ads as well, although my ad is not displaying malware. My ad is telling you to get off that stupid platform. But this is coming from TechCrunch, and Taylor Hatmaker, who wrote this, and thank you very much, Taylor, for letting me crib off of your article. Now with that, let's talk about this, because a handful of verified Facebook pages were recently hacked, and essentially they are sending malware through ads approved by and purchased through Facebook. Now, the accounts should be, and I say this should be easy to catch, because they are impersonating Facebook themselves. But honestly, nobody looks at these things. Most people aren't trained. They don't look at it this closely. And when you've got that blue check mark on a public thing in Facebook, unlike Twitter now where you can buy the check mark, you have to verify your account, and there you go. And so it looks like an official Meta ad or Facebook ad. Now, these compromised accounts include official sounding pages like Meta Ads and Meta Ads Manager. Those accounts shared suspicious links to tens of thousands of followers through their, obviously, paid posts, and it went well beyond the followers, because you can target through demographics, just as I targeted through demographics in my recent ad. In another instance, one of these hacked verified accounts purported to be Google AI pointed users toward fake links for Bard, which is the ChatGPT competitor by Google. And there you go. Now, one of these accounts that was hit was belonging to an Indian singer and actress known as Miss Pooja, and that account had its name changed on April 29th. That account, for the record, has been around for a decade for Miss Pooja, has more than 7 million followers, and obviously was advertising and posting to those 7 million plus followers in targeted advertising malware. That is a huge following, not good. Now, Facebook tracks and publicly displays a history of name changes for verified accounts. That is some transparency, but if you're not going in and looking to see that, like, oh, this is a Facebook ad officially to that I can make 10 bucks. I can go to Google AI. I can do whatever. And if you're not actually going in the fine print to say, okay, how long has this been account there? What were its previous names? Where is it coming from? Meaning, if I'm being targeted here by something that says Meta Ads here in the United States, and it's Miss Pooja accounts in India, well, what sense does that make? But if, unless you're looking for those things, you're not going to see it. You're really not going to see that scam. And now, what's most egregious in these cases is that the hack pages were not only impersonating major tech companies, including Meta and Facebook itself, but they were able to purchase these actual ads and then go ahead and distribute these things with download links to an unsuspecting population. And so here we go. In spite of the very recent account name changes, these ads were apparently approved without issue from the automated system, in the same way that I literally got an ad for a video I did called Screw Facebook approved. It'll take my $100. Now, all of the impersonator pages that were identified, fortunately, have since been disabled. And this past week, Meta shared a report, interestingly enough, on a recent spate of AI-themed malware scams. In those instances, attackers were luring Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp users to download malware by posing as chatbots or popular AI platforms like ChatGPT. One of those clusters basically was a malware known as DuckTale that's been plaguing businesses on Facebook for a few years now. So this is interesting. Just make sure that if you're going and seeing something that's really interesting to you, whether it's, oh, go sign up for like a free professional license of ChatGPT or something like that, now for a limited time, read the fine print, do your homework, go to chatgpt.com. Or if you are basically following an account now that looks like it's an advertisement from somebody, you know, hey, wait a second, this, I follow Miss Pooja all the time. Now suddenly it looks like she's calling herself Meta Ads. Go investigate. Go check it out. You know, or better yet, don't buy anything. Don't click on anything in Facebook. And even better, get off Facebook. Just ditch it. That's what I hopefully am eventually going to do. For right now, it's a necessary evil, and I'll keep yelling at them on their own damn platform. And we'll see if we can get this one in advertisement as well. And so there you go. Hopefully you've learned something, and we'll call it a day.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for the deep dive segment, where we take a closer and deeper look at a cybersecurity, cyber warfare, or technology issue around us. And if you have any suggestions for a deep dive segment or something you'd like me to dive into, you can once again find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. That's questions@securityfanatics.com. I am more than happy to take a look at it. And if it meets our standards, we are more than happy to do a deep dive on it. So let's begin.
And this week's deep dive is actually on reality. And the reason why we're talking about this is because of deepfakes. And deepfakes are challenging our perception of what reality actually is. And I think this is getting worse and worse. And I recently wrote an article about this for Smirconish.com that I think this is one of those next frontiers of essentially how we are going to lose who we are and how we perceive things by virtue of technology. And hear me out here, because I think this is an important one. This is near and dear to my heart. And here's what's going on. Because we humans, we can't live 100% in the truth every day, no matter how honest we claim to be. Now, think about this. We have to escape our realities to keep our minds active and sane. We take vacations to places that look and feel nothing like, you know, where we live, our homes. We get absorbed into all types of media. We read great fiction novels that take us to faraway places. We watch shows and movies that create an alternative existence where we can aspire to be a superhero or just the average person that saves the day. And while these escapes are necessary to who we are as human beings, at some point we have to come back to reality. We have to come back to Earth and face life. You know, we have bills to pay. We've got bosses to deal with. We even have to participate in society as a whole and even in the political process, although that oftentimes can be rather stressful. However, when truth and perception of reality, you know, that which helps anchor us as productive citizens begins to erode, we've got a serious problem on our hands. Our actual reality is now in the process of being shattered, and it's tearing us apart. And if we don't stop this, I really do think it's going to doom society as we know it. Now, hear me out here, because outside of escapism, misinformation and disinformation have always been part of the human existence. Since basically the beginning of civilization, from the Olympic runner that's, you know, literally running against Usain Bolt, they have to convince themselves that they're the best in the world, that they can beat Usain Bolt in a race and really believe it. You know, think about generals on a battlefield that have convinced the army or the enemy that they are weak in one area where they're actually strong to give them advantage. Think about kings and emperors and presidents trying to assuage a population due to a disaster or a scandal. We've always just accepted these things as normal operating procedures. These events could be considered one-off or isolated, even if they recur with some relative frequency. This is who we are and who we have been, for centuries, for millennia. But what past humanity never had to deal with what we have to deal with, which is simply the largest information delivery system ever created that bombards billions of us daily with information, real or fake. Now, while this has been a boom for collaboration and communication, the internet has been, it's also been the world's intelligence services' best friends. With most of us now getting our news in digital formats, mostly on social media, we're exposed to thousands of news stories daily. You know, we really are, depending on your feed, could be hundreds, but there are thousands of news stories around the world being published every single day. And you add into this mix dubious or downright illegitimate quote-unquote news sources, and we end up with startling facts like 126 million Americans were actually reading Russian intelligence propaganda disguised as news in the lead-up to the 2016 election. That is absolutely confirmed. I've basically read the studies. I've seen the propaganda myself. I was involved in one of the researches, and quite frankly, it's getting worse because now we live in the era of deep fakes. And when it comes, basically, and with living in this era comes more perilous situations for humanity. We are being taught not to believe things we see or hear, especially if they do not align with our views. And here's an example. Recently, Tesla owner Elon Musk was in court. Now, he's been accused of making false claims in 2016 about Tesla cars' self-driving capabilities. An individual was listening to these, reading these, bought a Tesla, died in a car crash in that self-driving Tesla, quote-unquote, and here we are. Now, part of Elon Musk's defense in this court case is that since he's a high-profile figure, he's a high-profile individual, he is susceptible to having deep fake videos made of him that make him look like he said something that he actually didn't. In other words, what he's arguing in court is simply that maybe it's not his fault because the plaintiffs in the case may not have been watching him all along. Now, the resiliency of the legal system to verify this evidence kicked in, and the judge has ordered Elon Musk to be deposed to confirm that he was indeed the one in the videos, in question, or if his team at Tesla made these, or if they're, quite frankly, simply deep fakes. But nevertheless, the seeds of doubt have now been sown in a way that can do long-term damage to our mental health. Now, on top of this, we have other cases. Two January 6th defendants have attempted to claim that the actual verified and legitimate videos of them wreaking havoc and destruction basically at the Capitol that day were deep fakes as well. Basically saying, well, this is a deep fake video. I wasn't at the Capitol, or maybe I was at the Capitol, but this video shows me kicking in a window or kicking in a door or, doing whatever, and it's not actually me. It's a deep fake. Both of them were convicted. Because the courts have resiliency. And while the courts have a process to ensure evidence is legitimate, they've had this for centuries, meaning can we prove that signature on that land deed from 200 years ago is legitimate? They have had this problem for centuries in the court systems, but they have systems and standards and methodologies like chain of custody, verification and validation of evidence, all those things. But we don't in the general public. We don't have those checks. Now, recently, an organization, Media Matters, and this is another example of this, released videos of Tucker Carlson, former Fox News host. He was had the most popular, by numbers, news broadcast in, I think it was like 7 or 8 p.m. Central Time. I'm not 100% sure where he was at. I didn't watch him regularly. But he basically was fired from Fox. It was a whole contentious thing. I'm sure you've heard of it. But Media Matters released videos of Tucker Carlson being and rather inappropriate and saying inappropriate things. And the almost immediate response on Twitter, essentially, to these damning videos was that they were all deep fakes, meaning his supporters were saying, oh, this isn't Carlson. Media Matters is a biased organization. And so all of these videos are deep fakes, are not actually of Tucker Carlson. These were fabricated. And this underscores the serious effect that confirmation bias has on a population. Imagine somebody more important than Tucker Carlson. He's a news pundit. I don't care how important or unimportant you think he is, but a more important person, like a president, for example. Imagine a president, the president of the United States, being caught on video or audio doing something highly illegal. Now imagine that all of his or her followers are simply saying this never happened because what we saw or what we heard didn't happen. On top of this, we think that we can spot deep fakes, and therefore Tucker Carlson supporters know, they absolutely know that these videos were fabricated. Except, here's the thing, we as humans actually stink. We really do stink at spotting deep fakes, and study after study after study has proven that. And so by virtue of this, as we are seeing these cases with Elon Musk, these January 6th defendants, Tucker Carlson supporters saying that wasn't Tucker Carlson, that was a deep fake, we are entering an era known as the liar's dividend. Now, this is a concept, essentially, that allows a liar to deny the truth more easily and be rewarded for it. Now, the authors of this article back from 2018, 2019 or so, when deepfakes were starting to first really come on the scene, authors Bobby Chesney and Danielle Citron wrote in essentially The Liar's Dividend, their article on this, and I quote, "Ironically, liars aiming to dodge responsibility for their real words and actions will become more credible as the public becomes more educated about the threats posed by deep fakes. Imagine a situation in which an accusation is supported by a genuine video or audio evidence. As the public becomes more aware that video and audio can be convincingly faked, some will try to escape accountability for their actions by denouncing authentic video and audio as deep fakes. Put simply, a skeptical public will be primed to doubt the authenticity of real audio and real video evidence. This skepticism can be invoked just as well against authentic as against altered or alterated content. And that's exactly what we are talking about here. As you are continuing to, let's say, believe that, okay, I know these things can be faked, now you've got confirmation bias in the mix, and, you know, my presidential candidate, my favorite TV pundit, my whatever, now the audience is primed to say, yeah, well, maybe this is fake. And that's the problem that we are seeing here. Now, the benefit, according to Chesney and Citron, is, and I quote, "This benefit flows perversely in proportion to success in educating the public about the dangers of deep fakes. If left to an uneducated population," and these are my words, "this situation is going to continue to expand. It's going to continue to grow the political divide that's already pervasive in America's society until basically nothing that anybody says can be believed by the other side. We already have a deep trust issue, and we are seeing right now in society what happens when trust breaks down, in this case between two political parties. You add in the liar's dividend, you add in the increase in deep fakes, and anything that is put out that is damning to one side, if it's putting out and it's damning to my side, well, immediately it's a deep fake because my guy wouldn't do that. My candidate wouldn't do that. And it's the same with the other. We are going to lose that reality. We are already living in two news ecosystems when the truth, quite frankly, is somewhere in the middle. And this is a huge problem. Now is the time to start waking up and facing the reality that we are creating through our advanced technology. We cannot afford any more to take extended vacations away from literal facts. And this is the problem that we have. And if you look at it, the possibility, for example, of Tucker Carlson having all of those videos of him being deep fakes is possible, but it's highly improbable given what we understand. And that's the thing. And that's one of the biggest issues. And so with that in mind, we have to figure out ways to combat this ever-growing onslaught of fake reality. And here's what I propose. Here's how I think we can combat this. Not that I think Congress would ever take this up or social media, but here's what I think we should do. The first step that we should have here is to require all social media platforms by law. I don't care if you're a fringe social media platform catering to a niche population. All social media platforms basically have to be required to use and continuously improve upon detection technologies that can spot deep fakes and block them more effectively than any human could. It really does take an artificial intelligence to understand and defeat another artificial intelligence, and there's going to be some false positives, but overwhelmingly, even though there are, this would overwhelmingly cut back on disinformation to a much higher degree. So having basically these deep fakes spotted, and Stanford is working on one called Detect GPT right now. There are others. I know Facebook was working on one, but who knows where that's going right now. But having this is one of those things. The second thing I think we need to do is we cannot allow artificial intelligence to choose what should or should not go viral. Now, Facebook's AI, for example, notoriously promoted anger-filled political vitriol because it got their platform more clicks and therefore they got more ad revenue. This literally helped foster a genocide in Myanmar. This needs to stop in all forms. We should not have things go viral because the artificial intelligence judges it should go viral because it will make the company more money. That drove a massive wedge into the political electorate because the angriest and just most hate-filled articles on Facebook, on whatever political side, were the ones that were shared because it was amping people up and Facebook was making money off of that anger, off of that division. The AIs need to stop. Nothing should be able to go viral unless people see it and people share it and it's organic. Now, the third point I have here is that we need to create and sustain an actual verification system online, but just for advertisers, that requires them to validate who they are and does not give them the ability to simply pay to play. Meaning, we should not have Russian intelligence firms being able to use cutouts or even directly buying ad time or space on the Facebooks of the world. Now, think about it this way. When I originally went through the Twitter verification process to get the blue check mark, and for the record, this is before Elon Musk was even considering buying the platform. He had nothing to do with Twitter at that point. When I went through this process before Elon Musk at Twitter, I actually had to send in a copy of my driver's license and other personal information to validate who I was, meaning they're doing kind of like a mini background check so that I was not a fake Nick Espinoza to get that blue check mark.
And thank you so much for tuning in this week. It was another fun show, and I think we covered a lot of really good stuff, and I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. It was a really good time, and I hope you keep tuning in. Thank you very much for listening to the Deep Dive Radio Show here with Nick Espinoza. And if you have any comments, suggestions, questions, absolutely anything, once again, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick A. ESP. Again, that's Nick A. ESP. And you can always send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. Don't be shy. I love the feedback. We've been having a great time with the show. And as always, stay safe and stay online, everyone. Thanks for listening.